The thing that I very quickly learned was that you need to keep a constant feed of activity when you're working with other people. Otherwise, they lose faith. They think that the project's not going anywhere.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Animation Ninja Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Bressler, but you can call me Duke. This is episode 45. But before we get started, I've got a new podcast. It's called Video Game Life. It's a simple podcast where I ask one question. If your life was a video game, what would it be like? And I've got a bunch of really fun, cool guests coming up. So check it out. Just search for Video Game Life on the iTunes podcast directory, or you can visit videogamelife.co to listen to the show. Today, I sit down with filmmakers Michael K. Wood and Julie Piffer K. Wood, creators of the upcoming animated short film The Wrong Rock. Their Indiegogo campaign for the film is now live, so check it out. Visit thewrongrock.com for more information. If you're an avid listener of the Animation Ninja Podcast, head over to our podcast page on the iTunes podcast directory and leave us a rating and review. It takes under a minute, and your feedback would really, really help our show. If you want me to keep making episodes, please let me know you're listening. I really appreciate it. And now, without further ado, on with the show. Hi, Mike and Julie.
Hi.
Before we get started and go any further, go ahead and introduce yourselves to our audience.
Okay, so I'm Michael K. Wood. I'm an animated filmmaker. Been around the block a few times.
I'm a producer. I'm the producer of The Wrong Rock, which is an animated short film that Michael is directing and I'm producing. I've been television development executive. I went to USC Film School, and I'm learning animation with this short film. It's kind of my first foray out of live action.
Very cool. And you guys reached out to me regarding this film, The Wrong Rock. Can you tell me a little bit about the film first, and then we'll go into how you guys got into the whole animation business?
Yeah, so this was a project that started about 6 months ago. I was looking for a pet project to get started on. Something small, not too crazy. It was meant to be the kind of thing I could just do myself. And I got going with it based on the idea of we wanted to make something, a story about equality, which sounds very generic, but I pared it all down to the very, very basics. I had this really silly little story about a pebble on a rock that wanted to get to a different rock, and ultimately decided that pebbles weren't going to be emotive enough, so I turned them into toadstools. And basically, this whole story just kind of rolled from there, and I put it onto the Artella virtual studio platform just at one point to see if there was any interest from other people, and a surprising number of people signed up to work on the project. So that was about 6 months ago, and we're about halfway through production now. So it's kind of insane.
I think Michael, kind of brushed over the theme of equality a little too quickly. I think that's really something that when he pitched the story to me, I was like, yes, like you have to do this one, because he came up with a way to tell a really profound story very simply, through telling the story of, Martin the Mushroom, who wants to get to this other rock. And when he goes to the other rock, he doesn't look like the mushrooms that are over there. So they reject him. And, through the course of his adventures, he's able to unite these two rocks of mushrooms that look completely different with a really great and very simple and visual reveal. And so I think, during this tumultuous time, having stories of inclusion is really important. And so I just want to touch on how I was struck by how nice of a story it was when Mike pitched it to me. And I said, yes, you have to do that.
Yeah, of course, in a perfect world, we would have loved it if this was a story, but that would work for like 1 minute or 3 minutes. But in order to give it its dues, it had to have certain things weaved into the story to make it really land emotionally. So now it's grown into this 10-minute piece. But it's really quite strong at 10 minutes.
It sounds awesome. And I did see some storyboards, and I saw some animatics from it. And it looks amazing. It looks great.
Yeah. Well, we're actually going to be showing a little bit of it at SIGGRAPH in a couple of weeks' time. I'm on a panel that I did a few years ago with some friends of mine talking about virtual studio production. And we're going to use this to showcase what the work that's been going on over on Artella. And then in the evening, we've got like this little party going together where we're going to be hanging out with some other animated filmmakers. And we're using SIGGRAPH as an opportunity to get the crowdfunding campaign going, actually. We're going to be launching the crowdfunding campaign on the 29th of this month. And we'll sort of try and get a bit of interest around the project and see if we can't raise enough funds to pay the team.
And so after this project is created, you're going to take it on the festival circuit, I imagine.
Yeah. We'll go through the usual steps. I think at the last film I did, I actually was pretty focused on hitting YouTube first. We did do a festival circuit, but I think we'll hold this one back just a little bit longer, try and aim high for the festival circuit. I think it's got really good awards potential. So we'll hold it offline for a little while we do the festival circuit, and then most likely it'll hit YouTube, where, I mean, the last one I put online has over 11 million views now, so we've got quite a lot of subscribers over there, so it should get, I'm hoping it will get a good following online.
Excellent. And your YouTube channel, just so that everybody knows?
Yeah, it's just Michael K. Wood. Or if you just type in Heromation, you'll find it.
Excellent.
The last short film I did was Devils, Angels, and Dating. So that's an easy one to look up.
And Julie, this was your foray into animation.
For me, but Mike has been, an animated filmmaker for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell them more about some of your experiences, Mike?
I actually was making animated shorts 20 years ago. I started off doing stuff in DOS, in Animator Pro, way back, dabbled a little bit in 3D Studio 4 in DOS, became a 2D animator. That's when I did my degree in animation and, did a few short films, during my, degree years. And then I got my first gig, as a proper animator in 1999, working for Rare doing computer games.
Excellent. Did you work on anything that I would have played?
Possibly. my first big project was Star Fox Adventures.
Oh, wow. Oh, I remember that game.
Yeah. And then after that, I did Cameo, which was a launch title for the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. And doing all the cinematics for those two games. After that, I've kind of been bouncing around all over the place. I stayed with them for about 7 years, did lots of cinematics for a variety of different types of games. And then,
Skylanders? That's popular with all the kids these days, right?
Yeah. Of course, she's jumping decades ahead. I spent a good number of years bouncing around all over the place. I got my first break to do my first movie down in Australia, working on Happy Feet. Came back, did some indie films, went to London for a while, did a lot of commercials. That's kind of where my film career kicked off. Went back to games for a little bit and came over to America, did some more games. And then I went to New York, where I did Skylanders, and then over to LA, where I've been ever since, actually. So I've been in LA now for about 4.5 years, and I've been doing a lot of previs for various high-budget movies ever since then. I've done quite a lot of short films myself before. This is I can't even count how many I've done. The last one that a lot of people know me for is Devils, Angels, and Dating. After that, I sort of jumped on to some other projects with a few friends of mine. I worked on The Ocean Maker with a friend of mine. And then we did Napoleon, which came out only a few months ago, actually. And so this is my first time directing since Devil's Angels and Dating.
Gotcha.
So it's been about 4 or 5 years since I did my last short as a director.
Working on independent projects, just in general, versus studio gigs, do you feel like you're drawn more to independent projects as is more satisfying for you to create something that comes from your own, I guess, tastes, as opposed to working on the bigger scale projects. Because I know,
yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that
we all have to eat.
It's good to
for
do
sure.
as a balance.
Yeah, we all have to eat, and you know, we do the bigger gigs, which, you know, it sounds like you worked on a bunch of really cool projects for bigger studios as well. But, you know, do you find it sounds like this project in particular was the reason behind it was you both wanted to create something that was your own vision of, you know, something that came from you directly from you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's quite hard to do a complete indie project all the time. So I have to admit, after my last one, I took a bit of a break and just did the day job and then got out and had a bit of a life. then about a year ago, I'd been doing little things, the little creative things, and I was just getting my kicks out of actually creating something from whole cloth from beginning to end again. And so I was like, oh, it's time to do another short film again. It's a very good balance. I like to do indie projects like this on the side of my day job. But it's quite hard to find the perfect balance because I don't want to do an indie project that takes me 10 years to make and it's just me in a bedroom. I would like my goal for this one was to finish it within a very short period of time. My current goal is to finish it within within the year. Having started it 6 months ago, that means I've got 6 months to go. Whether I pull it off is another thing. But my goal is that because the trouble is if it goes on for too long, it's like swallowing up so much personal time. It's nice to be able to get back to having a bit of a life again on the side and, you know, go out and enjoy the world.
So speaking of, you guys obviously have been working together for a while. In terms of your relationship with work, doing your project on the side and having day jobs, and how do you balance everything? Do you have a set schedule, or is it something that you have to kind of make up as you go along? Is it constantly shifting? How do you get the work done and still feel like you're not burnt out and that you have enough time to do things like go to the store, laundry, you know, spend time away from work, that kind of thing? Have you worked that out?
I don't think I could say we don't exactly have a plan.
He's definitely a workaholic, but I see that he's so passionate about it. And I think what's interesting about working on a side project is that when you have that passion, some days, you know, he can just work all day and as if no time has passed because he's so passionate about it. But he definitely, you know, works all the time.
I do have to cut myself off sometimes. I will, from time to time, sort of go, okay, today's a break day, or we have an afternoon off. And Julie will often make plans that, whether I like it or not, I'm along for the ride, you know, just to make sure that I get away from my desk. But yeah, it's not the easiest thing. You definitely have to balance things out. What I've been lucky enough to have is that I've actually, the last few jobs I've had, I've actually had breaks between them. And I'm comfortable enough that I keep getting enough work that I don't have to worry too much. If I can afford to sometimes turn down a job, in order to carry on working with some personal work. And so for the last year or so, I've actually had these little breaks where I've been able to do bursts of personal work before getting back to doing the day job.
Excellent.
And I actually have a team, on Artella working on the project too. So in a perfect world, they keep things moving along. I just need to give feedback as we go.
Yeah, I don't know if you know about Artella, but it's a virtual studio model where animators from all around the world are working on shots, and it's, you know, the platform in which we all communicate. And so it is nice to have, you know, dedicated people working on it as well.
Right, so that you don't, you know, have to do everything on your own. I mean, I think that it would take a gazillion years if you had to do everything on your own, plus rendering and, you know, all of the technical parts of it as well.
Yeah, well, we haven't got too far into the rendering yet. We're in the early stages of that one. In fact, I've got to do a few things this weekend just to make sure that there's something on the Indiegogo video. It's really good. We get every now and again you get a team member who can put in a solid chunk of time, and they just churn stuff out and submit it to the Artella feed. We get different extremes of people that are involved. So like one or two people require a bit more hand-holding in order to get the best results. And then other people are able to do the whole thing all themselves. I do find myself in a role where I'm having to coach and teach certain tricks.
I know that working over the internet on a flat platform directing a team is very challenging. I've had to do it myself a couple times, and it's would you go into a little bit of detail about the tricks that you've learned and how to communicate with your animators and getting your vision across?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly the first time I did this, the thing that I very quickly learned was that you need to keep a constant feed of activity when you're working with other people. Otherwise, they lose faith. They think that the project's not going anywhere. I know when I started my last project years ago, my work colleagues just sort of said, don't bother doing this. They never work. They always die. People start them and they never get finished. So I had that in the back of my mind the whole time, thinking, okay, well, I have to prove to the team that it's not going to die. Therefore, I would make sure that there was continually new content appearing in the feed. And we had a Facebook-like feed, which is a similar thing to what they have on Artella. So I'm just making sure that there's something there all the time. If it goes a little dead for a couple of days, then I'm going to make sure that I'm telling them what I'm doing in order to make sure that people are engaged. So that's one thing. Another is that people like to communicate with you privately a lot of the time. They will reach out to you on a one-on-one basis. But a lot of the time, that communication is something that the rest of the team can benefit from or would like to participate in. So I'm always encouraging people to post somewhere where the rest of the team can see them. And then that acts as some of the activity that tells people things are going on. But it also helps them all learn from each other. So that's a couple of things. Apart from using Artella, we're also using Slack, which helps us have a bit more, a quicker back and forth. But what I tend to do is I try to keep all the visual stuff on Artella and all the critiques and things like that, because they have a good draw over system and comment system over there. But then when it comes to, if someone just has a quick technical question and they want to know how something works quickly, then it's actually a bit faster to pop over to Slack and go there. It's just like instant messenger, that sort of thing.
We also do team meetings, usually like if it's once a week, where people can come on and video chat, and can accommodate a lot of people in this video chat, and that's another good way for people to ask questions and hear the answer to other people's and just be involved. And we record those so that if team members can't come but they want to hear what we discussed, so there's just that constant kind of communication is key.
Yeah, we use Zoom, and it makes it pretty easy, actually. The only trick we have is trying to pick a time in the week when lots of people from all over the world can all get on the same call at the same time.
I can see how that'd be very challenging.
Yeah, I know some friends of mine did this kind of thing all the time, and I knew what time slots they used, but that didn't necessarily work for us. So in the end, we sort of got into a routine of doing weekly meetings, but one would be on a Saturday morning and the other one would be on a Sunday afternoon. And you just alternate between the two times every other week so that different people had the opportunity to have some face-to-face time with you.
Hey folks, if you're getting a lot of value out of this show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/animationninja. At only $1 a month, Animation Ninja patrons get awesome rewards like access to each week's show over 48 hours in advance. And don't forget, I'll be announcing every new patron and their website at the top of each week's show. Thank you so much for your support, everyone. Listener mail is a real thing. Believe it or not, I've been making content for over 25 years and I've learned a thing or two about it. If you have a burning question you'd like to ask me about filmmaking, animation, podcasting, or anything we've talked about on this show, send an email to askdoog, that's A-S-K-D-O-O-G, at animationninja.com. Or you can send me a tweet at animationninja1 on Twitter, and I'll do my best to give you my most honest, well-thought-out answer ever. And now, back to the show. Let's dive deeper. And maybe you guys could tell me, I'm very fascinated about what drives creators and what is the voice inside of, I mean, you know, you have a kid who is an art, every kid is an artist, and they're drawing and they're creating things at a very young age. And then one day they put all the creative tools away and then they do something else because of one reason or another. But some kids keep drawing and they keep creating and keep the imagination still running wild. What is it for you both that keeps you going in terms of creating projects, putting stuff out into the world that, you know, comes from your imagination?
I mean, for me, I find that some of the greatest kicks I get are out of those moments where you've sort of molded this complete thing and you're putting it out into the world. Certainly, I love spending those moments where you've spent ages animating a thing and then you put it into the timeline and you see how it works relative to all the shots around it. And it gets even better when you layer on the sound and the music and all of that kind of stuff. And that really gets me buzzing, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit like a drug in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, you know, for me, it's just I'm constantly inspired with new ideas and new projects, that the development process is, you know, kind of my favorite. Sometimes during production, I need to be inspired by other people's inspiration to keep, you know, keep motivated on the production side of things. You know, seeing how passionate Mike is about it will be like, okay, yes, I remember that this is amazing and I should just go ahead and finish this spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not always fun, but I just continue to have new ideas and new inspirations that I feel like it's a gift. And if you don't share it, it's lost on you. Mm-hmm. So it's something that you just have to give it the time and space to create something.
And if it wasn't clear already, Julie and I are man and wife. So
oh yeah, I'm aware of that.
So one of the things that we've been discovering as well is just like exactly what projects that we can do that are independent, which projects we can do together. We have a project that where we've been working on things. So Julie's definitely more towards the writer side of things than I am, and I'm more sort of the visual side of things. So we have a project where we've been working on things where I've been coming up with some broad ideas, and then she will spend some time writing them. But there were other things that Julie wanted to create, and at one point I came to the conclusion that it would be really smart for Julie to try and write books in order to get her creative juices out there, so to speak. So it mainly because it was something that no one could stop you from doing. Like in the same way that I can make a short film from nothing. And certainly, it's nice to work with other people, but at the end of the day, I could start and finish a short film entirely on my own, which is one of the appeals of doing it on the side. But for Julie, I convinced her to start writing her own books, and she's written two now.
Excellent.
Actually, technically, I'm working on the third one, which is a children's book based on The Wrong Rock, because yes. It has such a nice story. So we've decided to turn it. We have such amazing concept artists working with us as well that have been making some really beautiful concept art. So we're turning the story, combining it with the concept art and making it into a children's book. And it started as kind of an idea of what could we do that's a cool, like, Indiegogo perk. But it's really become its own thing in itself, which it will be an Indiegogo perk, but then it'll be available afterwards too. So it's kind of cool that's kind of even spurned its own life of its own.
Excellent.
Because, I mean, we had the story, we had all the artwork, and it just seemed logical that we could make a children's book out of that. Julie did a first pass on rewriting it, and it just sounded great instantly, and it was obvious that it was going to work. So we went back to the artists that had done stuff for it already and just had them do some additional artwork to fill in the gaps. And we're pretty close to finishing that off, so it will be available as an Indiegogo perk on the campaign. But then afterwards, if all goes well, we'll probably publish this thing.
Excellent. You said that there's some challenges that you faced during production. I'm sure many challenges, but can you think of one that sticks out in your mind, something that would be helpful for filmmakers? One of those moments, as you were talking about, that kind of like, we got to keep going, and it was like you were facing all the odds and you overcame them. And what was the challenge and how did you overcome it?
Well, there's different ones to look at depending on the project, isn't it?
For this one, for the Wrong Rock in particular.
We haven't finished this one, so the challenges are still probably yet to, we're still going to hit some of them. I could give you some examples actually from the last short film I did where, because I'm not a modeler or a texture artist, I knew that I was going to have to attract talent in order to flesh out that part of the film. And it felt amazingly good when the modeling and texturing aspects of that film were done. It was like there was this big uphill hurdle. There was no way of knowing if the film was going to be completed until we'd sort of passed that hurdle. And then all of a sudden, most of like the modeling and the texturing and things got done, and it felt like it was all downhill from there. And just things seemed much easier, and the mental block was gone. But this one, I mean, I'm still not that much of a model of texture, so I'm still reaching out to colleagues of mine to help do those aspects. And to some degree, we're almost over the hump on that. Like, we've got our characters done. We just need some environmental stuff to be fleshed up. But actually, the film is so simple that it's not as much of a worry as it was on the last project. So it's like a not as big a hump. If you see what I mean.
It's funny that you say it's so simple because it seems actually much more complex to me, again, being fairly new to animation. It's incredibly complex, and like there's a lot of water and water effects, and I think that figuring out how the water was going to look and move from an outside perspective seemed like a really big challenge. Just getting, getting that kind of worked out. It's actually, it's epic in its smallness.
Yeah, well, the last film, we didn't know how to do fire, but we figured that one out. So when I dived into this one with trying to do water, I wasn't too worried. Of course, I was working at DreamWorks at the time when I was looking at getting this thing going, and one of my friends over there just sort of had seen the animatics with all the waves and everything crashing in front of the camera, and he thought I was insane. The truth is, I've done some tests with the latest version of Maya that make me feel reasonably comfortable that I can tell all the story points that I need with the tools that I have. And if we manage to push it further than that and make the water even prettier than that, then it's a bonus. But I'm not expecting the water to look like photoreal water. Absolutely not. But we can keep our fingers crossed and we'll see how close we get.
Yes, water is always a challenge, whether it's 2D or 3D. It's very difficult to animate. Since you have had your foot in independent and studio projects, coming from the inside, what would you say is the future of the medium? What would you say is the future of film? And I'm not talking about like future long-term, saying like in the next 5 years. It seems like everything is going towards television or, short form content. That's what everybody's saying, but with Netflix and Hulu and all of the digital delivery services, and less people are going to the theater. How do you both feel about that? And what do you think is going to happen in the next 5 years, maybe 10 years, in terms of content consumption?
I mean, I've certainly looked towards things like video on demand and Netflix as a very interesting new field. Like, I am actually, as somebody who enjoys just watching something on Netflix at home in the evenings, it's certainly been a medium that I gravitate towards. Most of what I do ends up in the cinema screens first, but I wouldn't have any complaints about working on something that was targeted for Netflix as a medium first. I know that a lot of people at this point would say things about VR and those sorts of things. I'm very curious to see where those things go. Having worked in games for about 9 years, I feel like I've kind of done most of what they're currently doing in VR before, and it's just more of the same, but with as a different screen in front of you.
A different point of view.
Yeah, I mean, because I used to work in a gaming environment every single day. I used a game controller to literally move from one set and set of characters to another, and then I would plonk my camera down and start moving around in that virtual space. So what people are doing now with VR glasses with less control seems even more limited in very many ways. But I'm curious to see where it goes. I'm still waiting to see the experience that really captures my attention and means that, and has me like do something in that medium. Other than that, it's really hard to figure out predictions. I know I did a lecture at a university probably about 6 or 7 years ago, and I was asked exactly the same question.
Everybody wants to know.
I think whatever my predictions were right then, I couldn't possibly say whether they've come true or not, you know?
Well, I think from the television point of view, what we're already seeing happening with the success of Netflix and Amazon and Hulu is that a lot of the smaller cable networks are closing. I would say, I've seen, like, for instance, Esquire Network just closed, and, there's rumors that a couple, there's might be a Discovery and Scripps might merge, and some of their, smaller networks that maybe aren't pulling in as many viewers. So there's basically going to be, I think, a shutdown in some of the smaller networks, and they're going to get condensed, and then they're going to be given in that a la carte manner, where we're already streaming things from the apps, and it's like, which ones do you want to pay for? And I think people are going to have more choice, but might have to pay more for those choices, which I think is interesting. But, there's always going to be more than enough choices, I think. And so those networks closing might be, isn't necessarily a bad thing. Because then we're seeing, for instance, YouTube has a new service and is creating their own original content. So the content platforms will always be there. It might just be different brands that are the drivers of it. And for the movies, I think it's interesting that we've already seen, because less people are going to the theater, much more, these big blockbuster movies are what's driving people to the theater. It's like, oh, well, that's in 3D, and oh, that has really cool effects. Like, I have to see that on the big screen. And so, I don't see that necessarily going away in order to continue to hope to drive people to the cinemas. And I feel like the reason they can still spend those budgets is because, for instance, China and overseas are still eating those movies up as well. So as long as they make their international money, they're still going to be able to do those, but there might just be fewer films because people aren't going to the theaters as much, myself included, to be honest.
And from the actual creation perspective, things seem to be splintering off in two different directions. One is that theoretically, we could be doing more virtual productions where people could be working from home. But funnily enough, the major studio productions are trying to keep things so secretive that that kind of thing isn't possible working with them. I mean, when you're working with a big company like Disney or something like that, security is paramount, and they make sure that the systems that you're working on are completely locked out of everything else. So you get the complete opposite spectrums. I will go home and work on a project where I can show anybody anything, and people will work with me from all over the place, and we're all sharing files across the internet. And then for my day job, I will commute to an office with a completely locked off security system that makes sure that everything is stays secret.
So basically, the future is unreadable. We don't know what's going to happen. but it really depends on the next big thing. What's the next big thing? And you don't think it's VR. You don't think VR is going to be... Movies are going to stay around for a little bit because of the superhero movies and the big events. And but in terms of the new technology that everybody's trying to jump on right now, which is virtual reality and augmented reality.
I think in some ways augmented reality is more interesting, but not necessarily as a linear medium like the kind of thing that we're doing here with a short film. I think that's more likely to be an interesting thing in terms of interactive applications and games and things like that. I'm certainly very interested in seeing what HoloLens does and things like that. VR for me right now is like, I think there's a little bit too much excitement in it, and that it's going to level off and then hopefully settle into a good spot where it might stick around this time. Because we've seen it before. It's come out many times before, and people lose interest in it because it doesn't get big enough. This time it seems to have gotten big enough that I think it will stick around. It will be a platform on which people will make games and experiences, and certainly rides in parks and things could benefit from it. But in terms of something that's going to be in every single living room, I'm a little bit more skeptical. I think it's a little bit like all those 3D TVs from a few years back that everyone said they were going to make content for, and then no one really could be bothered with it.
Right. Yeah, those went away pretty quickly.
I think the problem with it is that, you know, storytelling at the, you know, on the onset of it is, you know, started from around a fire where everybody can get together and, you know, and hear the same story. So it's really a shared experience. And I think the limitation of VR is that it's a very solo experience. So I definitely don't think that it would replace film and TV in any way.
And sometimes when you want, I mean, at the end of a long day, I have the option of playing a computer game or just watching some linear TV. And I will frequently go, well, you know what, I'm tired. I just want to watch some linear TV. And so I think that's always going to be around. People are going to have that mindset of like, do I want to just be entertained or do I want something that's interactive? And I feel like certain things like VR experiences and things like that call upon you to be more interactive. And sometimes you're just tired and you just want to watch something that entertains you.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're in the creative field, you kind of don't want to do anything that's, you know, involves thinking. You just want to kind of veg
exactly.
out and recharge your batteries.
As Julie says, I mean, this is all evolved from telling stories around a fireplace. And I think... at the core of it, that's all what we're really looking for. We want to be entertained. We want to laugh. We want to follow along with a story that we can relate to. And that's exactly what we were trying to do with The Wrong Rock, in the sense that we were trying to make a film that everyone can relate to. It deals with some issues around that you could arguably say it's about sexism or racism or ageism or anything like that. But we pared it all the way down to just toadstools on a rock so that essentially anybody who's had any issues along those lines could still relate to it without being excluded from the story. Because if it was a story about just racism, for example, then somebody who's had issues with, say, sexism in the workplace or something like that might think that this isn't a story for them. Right. But really, these are all related issues with the same sorts of problems and very similar solutions in some cases. So It was fascinating to try and make a film where we pared it down to a sort of a general ism, so to speak.
Well, I cannot wait to see it. Speaking of storytelling and inspiration, what was both of your inspirations when you were kids? Something that you saw when you were very young that sparked your imagination? Like, for me, I saw The Terminator when I was very young, and it blew my mind, and I was like, I want to make that something like that. For you, what would you say, you know, something at a very young age, maybe a movie that would come on or a book that you could read over and over and over and over and over again, and, you know, say you're watching television and the movie comes on and you're like, you know what, I could watch this, and it just never gets old. Do you have something like that?
Well, I watched a lot of cartoons when I was a kid.
Which cartoon?
But I would definitely say things like DuckTales.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those ones stuck. Gummy Bears as well, which was around the same era as DuckTales. I watched a lot of things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and He-Man and things like that. But I think the ones that really made me interested in being an animator was things like DuckTales. And then I'd sort of started to make the decision that I was interested in being an animator. And that was around about the time that Aladdin came out in the cinema.
Mm.
And I sat down in that theater and I watched the film. And I knew then that that was what I wanted to do. I turned to my dad, who was sitting to my side, and he was asleep. He missed my pivotal moment.
Wow. How about you, Julie? What inspired you when you were a kid?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was definitely an avid TV watcher. I was kind of glued to it. And I'm trying to think if there was just one, you know, or one pivotal kind of moment. But I think, you know, I think it was just in general. You know, I know that's a bad answer, but I would watch like every movie that came out. I would always want to go to the movies with my aunt would take me every weekend. Literally every weekend we would go, and it was just my time away from my three siblings and, you know, just getting the opportunity to like step in somebody else's shoes for a minute. And I just loved the cinema experience, honestly, growing up, which sucks that I actually don't go very often anymore. But I am trying to think if there was just one, you know, but no, just the cinema experience in general. I was there every weekend.
Excellent. So I have two questions left, and very important questions. First of all, and you talked a little bit about your YouTube channel already, but how can people contact you and see all of your films and your projects?
Well, this film in particular that we've been talking about is easy to find if you just go to therongrock.com. Other than that, we've got a bunch of other websites related to it. My work, you can see at michaelkaywood.com, and our combined work is at onhiromation.com.
Also, I think we mentioned that we're launching the Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign that goes live on Saturday, June 29th. So next Saturday, that will be available, and it'll be online for 18 days.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, I'll make sure to put all of those links into the show notes for sure. Have you guys played video games? You've worked on video games. So Julie, yeah. Are you much of a gamer? Have you played Super Mario Brothers and all the good stuff?
Well, you know, being the youngest of four kids, I was always given one chance to play, and I would die right away, and they would say, "You suck," and like take the controller away. So I watched. I was a watcher. They wouldn't let me play when I was younger. So for that reason, I'm not very good at the controlling. Mm-hmm. So I like to just like, you know, tell people what to do and, you know, and live vicariously through that. But I like LA Noir and like, you know, the Game of Thrones games and like games that are where I can dictate the story and play that way. So those are my favorites.
Cool. Well, this is the question. If your lives were a video game and you're in this video game together, what would it be like? What would be the challenges? Who would be the first level, aka easy boss at the end of the first level? And who would be the ultimate last level, you know,
most challenging boss.
Oh, well, and we're in the same video game?
Yeah, you're in the video game, and you basically have to overcome these challenges. What would it be like? And you can relate it to the challenges of making the wrong rock, or maybe another project, or day-to-day struggles.
Well, I had a little think about this, and since one of my greatest challenges was just coming to a place where animated films were made, coming to America, I mean, that was my first level. That was level one. And it's a little bit like the role-playing game or a Zelda-style role-playing game where you're on this linear experience trying to get to this very specific goal. Mm-hmm. And then once you get past it, suddenly you're in this open world where everything is a possibility. And you're trying to figure out what your next move's going to be. So I feel like I'm in level two now.
You're in level two now. So yes. What is the boss at the end of level two? What do you think it's going to be?
Oh, I don't know. See, that's the challenge. I'm still trying to figure out what direction to go in. I mean, level one seemed like this really linear, narrow thing aiming towards trying to impress recruiters. But then once you get past that and you open up the scope of your world, you start realizing there's a lot more to it than that, and that there's all these other things to do in life. There's the day job where you're trying to do certain things. There's the indie projects you're trying to do certain things. You're trying to have a life and being in a good relationship and have a home. So I'm definitely in phase two or level two, trying to figure out which one of those bosses is the most worthy of my bow and arrow.
Nice. I like it. Do you have anything to add to that, Julie?
Well, I think my answer would be a little esoteric, and I'm sure Mike will roll his eyes because he hears me talk about this all the time. I think interest in life is through the idea of self-realization and becoming, you know, the best version of yourself. So I think the boss at the end is always a piece of yourself that you have to destroy in order to become the best version. That one thing that's like holding you back. It's always yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yes.
I told you. That's esoteric.
I agree. Oh, I agree. It's our self-limiting beliefs are what keep us from achieving everything we would ever want to achieve. So I agree with that.
Wow, that would be an ending to a game, wouldn't it?
Yes, a very deep game.
You can find that character, Mike. I'm sure you can find a cool way to visualize that.
Oh, okay. Right, next movie.
So this is the last question. This is the most important question, so I hope you're excited. From the wonderful 1982 classic, Conan the Barbarian, what is best in life? And you don't have to answer what Conan answers, obviously, but your answers, and he gives three answers. So your three answers for what is best in life.
Well, making Julie laugh and smile is number one.
He's a good husband.
You know, that moment where you've created something magical and you're putting it together in the edit, and just, you know, feeling it all coming together. That's an amazing feeling as well. I hadn't really thought of a third.
The third one's usually a goofy answer, so.
Can I have bacon?
Yeah, sure, bacon. So making Julie laugh, creating something, and bacon for you. And Julie?
Yeah.
He says bacon because I make him eat. We have no meat Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays. So that's why he says that I go meatless half the time. But, you know, we're a fan of your podcast and knew that you would ask us this question. So my answer is already ready on this one.
Oh.
It's sex, food, and meditation.
Oh, boy. Those are great answers. Very great answers. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap it up?
No, I think that was the gist of it. Thank you very much. It's really good to talk to you. And by the way, I'm a big fan of the podcast, listen all the time, and I think you're a really good host.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mike. I can call you Mike, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, thank you, Julie and Mike. Thank you very much for being on the show. And you guys were great guests. And, you know, I wish you the best with The Wrong Rock. I cannot wait to see it. And I'm very excited to find out, you know, exactly when we can see it. It's probably
We'll be putting out a video for the Indiegogo, and the whole Indiegogo campaign launches on the 29th. So you'll see a video where we get to talk about it a bit more, and so there'll be plenty more to learn about it in just the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and we'll show some things with that, little sneak peeks. But we definitely hope that the whole thing is done by the end of December. That's our goal, and the whip is cracking. And
you can sense the producer like holding a gun to my head as she says this.
I'm a good producer. I always, stay on schedule, and sometimes I'm even under budget. So
excellent.
That would be nice.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Animation Ninja Podcast. If you're an avid listener of this show, head over to our podcast page on the iTunes podcast directory and leave us a rating and review. It takes under a minute, and your feedback would really, really help our show. If you want me to keep making episodes, please let me know you're listening. See you next episode. This is Doug Bressler signing out.